Love Osho podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Welcome. This is Hell Till Weekly episode number 24 coming out to you live from Singapore again. It is a beautiful day and this time we are coming to you live also from Italy, which is awesome. We have such a brilliant episode coming out to you this week. Indeed, hope you are staying safe and staying well and sane as well. And hopefully you are already building on your healthy habits as we are going in and out of lockdowns because of the COVID situation. It seems that so many countries are seeing second waves of sorts, at least. So do make sure you you stay safe, wear the mask, do the social distancing dance, and still, stay healthy and build up your healthy habits by going into your runs and doing your homebound workouts or wherever you can do your workouts. Eat healthy, make sure you sleep enough, and upkeep your social relationships as well. So this week, we have a special guest with us. We have Mr. Francesco Gatti with us today. He is a very awesome health enthusiast. He has a very long experience from the health tech industry. Indeed, he's a qualified teacher, journalist, and counselor. And recently, he was the head of the First Beat Lifestyle Assessment at ACTA here in Singapore. He has a passion in preventative health and performance-enhancing lifestyle interventions. He is a Wim Hof practitioner and biohacker. He's done all sorts of awesome stuff, such as silent meditation retreats, Wim Hof retreats, and so on and so forth. I'm really looking forward to this discussion. Welcome on board, Francesco.
Well, thank you so much for having me and for the opportunity for this chat. I'm really excited.
This is awesome. How is your day so far?
Amazing. So I just had my, of course, cold shower, my coffee in a fasted state, and I had a Russian lesson as well. So I'm studying Russian. So I think, it was a great start.
Now that sounds like the perfect morning routine. You know, fasted state, doing the cold shower, and some obviously some mental task work as well by studying a foreign language. That's simply awesome. Could you give us a short introduction to yourself?
Sure. So I mean, I'm Italian, and I lived in Italy till 2004, and then I started traveling, and then officially in 2008 I moved to London, and that's where my life changed. So my academic background, I studied philosophy, I was a teacher, I was a journalist, but then in London I completely changed my life. There was a new environment, new people, and you know, I got kind of in tune with the exciting super professional and vibes of the City of London and everything that can offer. So I got into business development. First, I worked in a startup for alcohol and drug testing. It was essentially biomolecular testing for the legal sector, predominantly family law. And then the startup was sold successfully. I stayed there in the new company for a year or so. And then I joined DNA Fit, which was founded by the same founder and CEO of the previous startup, who had a little bit of a break and then decided to get back into business with DNA Fit. And DNA Fit was 2014, 2015, was very pioneering the DNA testing in the health and fitness industry. So DNA tests for sport and nutrition, which now is almost like a commodity. Genetic testing has exploded in the last few years. But at the time, DNA Fit did a real great job of opening the market, if you like. It was a driving force for this new market. And again, DNA Fit is a success story. It was acquired a couple of years ago, 2-3 years ago, by a larger group, Prenetics, which is based in Hong Kong, so near you. And then I decided to change my life and move to Singapore. And in Singapore, as you mentioned before, I got to work with AXA. It's a spin-off of Interactive, which has been working for many years in collaboration with the Singapore government software development company. But AXA specifically was in charge of the National Step Challenge, which is a massive project of the Singapore government trying to help Singaporean moving towards a healthier lifestyle. So it's a great initiative, perhaps the only one in the world from a government level where there is active investment to try to improve the health of the citizens of a country. So it was really exciting. And I was specifically in charge of a business unit, the first BEAT lifestyle assessment, because AXA, in addition to the STEP challenge, a national STEP challenge, was the exclusive distributor of first BEAT from Finland. So I was brought in the company to head up this business unit.
All right, all right. And then quite recently you moved back to Italy, right?
Well, then what happened is that after 2 years of being in Singapore, I decided that that was enough.
Sure.
And then I wanted to have again a change. So I went traveling. I left again. Oh, nice, I left everything. Nice, yeah. And we were traveling in Asia since December last year till March. And then COVID happened.
Of course, yeah.
And then so we had to quickly think on our feet and decide where, because I could see this coming. You know, we were in Vietnam at the right time where COVID was escalating. You know, the border started to shut down. So I kind of realized that the plan of traveling was probably not a good idea. At that time, be mindful that it wasn't as bad as just within weeks. It really was the turning point where many governments decided to completely shut down borders.
Sure.
And
sure.
Thankfully, I had this intuition, said, look, let's find a safe place and be there. So we decided to go to Ukraine, where my beloved and partner mom lives, and she has this very nice house right by the sea in a little village by the Black Sea. So managed just on time to escape Vietnam, that closed the borders within 2 days. Ukraine, the same. As soon as we arrived, after 48 hours, they shut the borders as well. They stopped any traveling within the regions as well. So we kind of were so lucky that we managed to get safely at home. And then also because in this little village, we didn't have a single case of COVID registered.
Okay, but,
And we didn't have a strict quarantine in the sense that, you know, every day we could go walk by the beach. You know, we would do like cold exposure because in March in Ukraine, it was very cold, 0 degrees. Actually sub-zero in the night. So we would go in the morning, swim in the cold water, just run by the sea. Like, it was super, super amazing quarantine. I have to say, we're super lucky.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds simply awesome. So it does seem like because of what's happened in your career, you know, after being a journalist and so forth, you've sort of gotten into the health and fitness industry. Was that sort of your passion as well, and how did you sort of get into the health and wellness sector and get excited about, you know, stuff like meditation and healthy habits and Wim Hof and so forth?
Yeah, so meditation is slightly different, because I got interested in meditation because of existential reasons. I was looking for the meaning of life. So it wasn't at the time. I was 18, 19, there was no biohacker, at least as far as I know. I didn't know anything about that. There were not many studies proving meditation was still a very niche thing for weirdos, you know, for the hippies or for people who were, you know, interested in real spirituality. So there was no evidence that meditation was good for, you know, relaxation, for sleep, for health in general. So it wasn't a health-related interest. It was more really a call from my soul. Mm. So leaving that aside, I didn't have any education like most people when it comes to health and fitness. So I was just, you know, doing physical exercises. I was playing football. But whatever was put on my plate, I would eat. I didn't have any education, not much awareness. You know, you just go with whatever the environment you are in leads you to do. But then because of my professional involvement with DNA Fit, at that point, my life really changed and I started taking responsibility over my own health. Because like most people in the world, I also, of course, had my health issues that I tried to fix in different ways, going to doctor, going trying alternative medicines. I don't want to go into the details, but, you know, I had a number of issues.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, not feeling very energetic. You know, for me, it was this idea, I knew that it's not normal not to feel energetic and sharp in my mind and just kind of struggle to get to the end of the day. So I was really trying hard, you know, taking this supplement, trying this diet, cutting the, you know, I was going up and down, but nothing really worked long term until I got exposed to the right environment, I would say, because working at DNA Fit, first I had to educate myself. And the chief scientific officer of DNA Fit is Dr. Keith Grimaldi, which is one of the leading scientists in nutrigenetics.
Okay.
He's a luminary. He's one of the world leading scientists. So I was with him, asking him questions personally, attending the conferences for my own education, even extra sometimes traveling because he is based in Italy. He would teach at university, so I would go just for my own interest. And then I learned the word biohacker. I didn't know anything about biohacking before then. And for example, once we sent a trial test to Ben Greenfield, he did the test, and there was a consultation with our head of product, Andrew Steele, an ex-Olympic athlete. So there was this fascinating conversation discussing the results of Ben Greenfield. So from that moment, I realized that Ben Greenfield has a podcast, and he invites all these very knowledgeable people in the world of health and fitness. So then we did the same with the top guy for biohacking. For some reason, I can't remember his name. So, I mean, I started to educate myself and read books. And then the other big influence was Alessandro Ferretti, a nutritionist from Italy who was based in the UK, whom I approached to collaborate with DNA Fit as a consultant, as an educator. I had an opportunity to, again, ask him a lot of questions, attend his lectures. And he is the one that really started to shape the way then my daily habits changed in terms of nutrition and in terms, mainly nutrition. I mean, that really changed a lot. And when I say nutrition, I don't say any, I'd like to differentiate between diet, which seems something restrictive, with nutrition, which to me means something more where you are consciously thinking of food as nutrients, as something that is beneficial to your health. So every time I eat, I try to think, is this going to go well with my body? Is this going to give me energy? Is this going to make me feel tired and you know, brain fog? Is this going to have a positive effect on my body or not? So that changed my relationship with food and the way I see these nutrients and energy. And I started to feel so much better. So, I mean, I can go into the details if you like of what I've done.
Of course. So I was just going to ask, you know, how does your nutrition or how does your food intake currently look like?
So as an Italian, I grew up on pasta, pizza, bread, like heavy carb loaded. And then I did the DNA testing. I came up very sensitive to carbohydrates. So that was the kind of wake up call. And Alessandro Ferretti is a proponent of the ketogenic diet. He's one of the experts. He's doing a lot of research. So I'm not here to say the ketogenic diet works for everyone. I don't want to give the wrong message that, you know, everyone should do a ketogenic diet. But there are lots of benefits. And especially for me at that time, being very sensitive to carbohydrate, and I went for maybe a year or two on a sort of strict ketogenic diet, meaning that I was testing my blood sugar and my ketone levels on a daily basis, because otherwise you don't know if you are in ketosis or not. And that was a real life-changing experience because, and in addition, of course, I started doing the intermittent fasting, or better to say time-restricted feeding, because fasting technically is when you really fast only water. So I also feel like it's important to differentiate. So I would, having, you know, a nice, good quality coffee, then get at work in a fasted state and really be very productive. And then at lunch, having some veg and a bit of healthy fat. and then at dinner, trying to eat as early as possible, not to eat too close to bedtime. And that's how, even now that I am free from the office slavery, if you allow me to say that, I still keep that kind of routine where I only eat twice a day or once, because being in Italy, it's very difficult to keep a healthy nutrition plan.
Oh, yeah.
Because temptations are all the time, everywhere. And as Oscar Wilde famously said, I can resist everything apart from temptations. So, I had a little bit of ice cream, a little bit of pasta, not too much, but, you know, I gave up to that. And it's not wrong, because I have a strong baseline now of many, many years. So I feel immediately that has an impact. So to go back to baseline, the best thing is to do just fast and really resets me. And then, you know, today I'm definitely going to have a much more clean diet. So the ideal plate would be vegetable with protein and healthy fat, and then can be like, you know, avocado, eggs and veg, or fish and veg. That's like perfect.
So basically, just to summarize, Francesco, I guess your sort of nutritional plan, if you may, is based on intermittent fasting or time restricted eating, as you mentioned, and a bit lower on the carbohydrate side, mostly, you know, vegetables and sort of lean proteins, such as fish and so forth, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah, that's how it looks like. And then, of course, there are different elements. You know, it's important also when it comes to quantity. I don't count calories, never counted, even when I was on the ketogenic diet. For me, is try not to feel heavy after a meal.
Mm-hmm. That is actually a really good tip, trying not to feel heavy after a meal. I mean, if we'd all sort of adhere to that, maybe we wouldn't need to sort of even try to count calories or whatnot. So that's actually something that I do challenge all the listeners to try out, to eat only as much which doesn't make you feel heavy. That's a good point, Francesco.
Yeah. Again, I'm not perfect, but when I eat slowly and I can really feel, I feel that, okay, now I'm satisfied. And then when I stop so that I can stand up and carry on whatever I was doing, like, you know, if you have to do some kind of mental work, you don't have that massive dip that happens when you overeat. So overeating is not good for longevity. There are studies on that. It's very well known. There are different biochemical pathways, and I'm not a scientist, but it's almost intuitive. Essentially, you overload the body to work harder. So it's not a very smart thing to do. So a little bit not under eating, but not overeating. So that's one rule of thumb that can be applicable to everything. And then, of course, is the quality of food as well. That's a much more difficult thing to realize in practical life, especially for people who travel a lot, or if you have to eat outdoor at restaurants. That's very tough. But I know I'm aware about the quality of food, so as much as I can, I try to eat organic or locally sourced food. For example, when I was in Singapore, I must say that was one of the biggest challenges I had to find quality organic food, because everything is imported. It's just the reality of it.
Exactly. No, I do fully agree with you. And it's a good point which you raised, that, you know, none of us are perfect, right? And it's impossible to try to live a life whereby you strictly restrict yourself to eating certain types of foods which are sourced locally and so forth, because, you know, we have our social lives as well, and we travel and all that type of stuff too. So you sort of need to build up your own balanced medium, I guess, whereby you try your best and you follow the sort of nutritional regime you have to the best you can, not necessarily being perfect at it, right?
Exactly. So that's my philosophy. I mean, I have to say, for a couple of years, I was quite strict. Yeah. I was at the beginning. I really wanted to see the results. I was totally into it. I could feel the massive difference made in my life. So I was highly, highly motivated, because once you start, within a week, within days, actually, maybe even just after one meal, you see the difference, and that's motivation. Sure. And then if you carry on, and then you have this very solid baseline where your body knows how it should be feeling, and then there are no limits to that. You can still feel better and better and better. But then sometimes you go off rail a little bit, fine, you know the difference, and you can come back to that baseline that is healthy. So, you know, I normally have one cheat meal. Very rarely I have two cheat meals on a row. So I do one, and then the day after I feel a bit like, okay. So I either go back to the very clean diet or just fast. Probably fasting for me is the best reset that I know.
Yeah, it makes sense. It does. So that gives you the sort of balance to enjoy a bit like you know, off the limits food as well, every now and then without being too restrictive.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I, for example, now I'm in Italy, and I must say, you know, ice cream is just divine, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Good, you know? And, gelato, yeah. Correct.
But in a ketogenic diet, ice cream is possibly the worst thing you can imagine, even though, of course, there are genetic variations. I should do some testing and see the sugar spike of ice cream compared to maybe pasta. I haven't done that, but I know, I feel it is, it's not like the healthiest meal, but
of course not. No,
once in a while, I just go for it.
Everything in moderation, I guess. So, yeah. All right, Francesco. Let's shift the gears a bit, because one of the interesting experiences you've done is the full Wim Hof retreat experience. Could you sort of give a background in terms of what got you into Wim Hof breathing, the cold therapies, and how was the experience with the man himself?
Yes. So, well, again, how I got involved is because of this professional exposure to the biohacker. So I don't remember exactly how I came across Wim Hof. Maybe it was some social media posting, was one podcast with Ben Greenfield of Dave Asprey. That's the, now it came to mind.
Oh, yeah, Dave Asprey, yeah.
The famous Dave Asprey. So, you know, basically I saw and I heard about this extraordinary man who is propagating the health benefits of cold exposure. So I got interested. And then essentially what I did, like I normally do with this kind of things, I tried out. You know, I read a little bit, but I don't have to know everything before trying. So I started with a cold shower, simple, free, no need to pay anything. I was in London at the time, it was winter, so I had plenty of quite cold water. So I started, and immediately I felt rejuvenated. You know, the effect was very visible, if you feel it.
Of course.
So from there, of course, I started to get a little bit more into it. So I think it was a year or almost two where I just did cold shower. I did the breathing on my own at home. And I was watching the videos, following all the different interviews. And because nowadays, the beauty of social media is that information is really available. You know, you get the real stuff and all you have to do is to practice. If you want to go deeper, then you can do the experience. So at that point, I felt like, okay, I reached the point where this is really good for me. And I want to go a step further. I want to meet the man and I want to really have the full-on experience. So I booked, was July. I was in Greece. It was like a heat wave with 40 degrees and I was like dying from the heat. I was on the sofa and I booked for the week experience in Poland that would be in December. And so basically that's what I did, and then in December of that year, I don't remember, like, you know, a few years ago, maybe 5 years ago or something like that, I traveled to Poland and spent basically a week there with a number of other people. We were like maybe 60 altogether, maybe more, divided into three different groups. Wim Hof was present. He welcomed us, he gave a lot of inspirational talks, and he supervised the whole experience. He wasn't leading all the workshops because, of course, at that point, Wim Hof was already quite popular. There was quite a lot of people. So there are, you know, different, you know, assistants, different qualified instructors who lead the course. But he was there, he was present every evening playing the guitar. You could ask him questions. There were sessions with him where everyone would, you know, ask any questions. He led as well some breathing exercises. And I spent some time with him. Once I was walking on my own outdoor and he came, he was, of course, barefoot in shorts. And
sure.
He just, you know, like an amazing guy. Like, yeah. He's so genuine. Like, he's one of those people that the way you see him on the video is in reality. There is absolutely no difference.
Okay.
Powerful. The man is really inspirational.
Okay, fantastic. And did you get to climb the mountain as well?
Correct. So the biggest difference was the fact that we didn't just do the breathing exercises and jumping into cold rivers, which actually is much colder than any cold shower or even
of course.
You get a
fridge, yeah.
Because it's running water in December from the mountain with, you know, just to get undressed. So the first day for me, that was the shock. We went out and they said, okay, now I'll get undressed and jump into the river. I mean, that was crazy because like the the water was so cold, you know?
Of course, yeah.
Like, I have to say that was a shock. And then I started trembling and shaking for maybe an hour or so. But they were training us to be able to get to familiarize also with this feeling of the shaking. So they didn't allow us to go straight into the sauna or to get dressed quickly because you need to train your body and the mind to get used with this feeling. And that's how they prepared you. And I have to say that within a few days, I thought it would be impossible for me to do such, you know, thing, yeah, like yeah. Walking up the mountains with minus 15, with blowing wind in shorts. I mean, this is crazy if you told me before, but I did it. And it's not just me. And I'm not a particularly kind of super strong, super fit guy. You know, I'm an average, healthy, fit guy. But there were people much older. There was like a 60 plus year man. There were lots of ladies, some people with some very health issues, like with cancer.
Sure.
But that the incredible thing about this is that it's not a feat of the body, of the strength of the body. It has more to do with the mind. And I'm happy to go more into the details of what for me was the realization of that.
That would be awesome, yeah.
So for me, like if you go to the gym and you want to put muscle, it's really about making an effort. Of course, there are mind components, but the fact with the cold, what I realize that it's not about how strong you are in terms of being able to lift something heavy, but it's about not allowing the mind to interfere with the natural ability of the body to cope with extreme situation. That was the biggest realization. You know, kind of going beyond the fear of death, because in that extreme situation,
yeah.
If you are walking up there, and towards the end, I was really getting to a point where I felt like, you know, I could weave there. I could see that the thought came of some doubt, something, oh my God, I can't do it, something like that. And I did not even allow this thought to enter my consciousness, because if that happens, then you can just collapse in a second.
Of course, yeah.
So it was the experience to face the fear and face the negative minds or these intrusive thoughts that can come into your consciousness, and not allowing that and just focusing on the step-by-step process of just simply keep moving, going up, and everything is fine and you can do it. And I did it and I reached the top. And the interesting thing is that for 3 hours going up, I never had any shiver, anything. I mean, arms were completely frozen, blocked. Yeah. I could hardly move. And, you know, there were a lot of pain. And I could feel the cold on the skin, but not inside. Inside, I didn't ever shiver a single time. That's quite incredible. But then as soon as we reached the top, and they said, okay, basically, you know, you're done. Immediately, I started shivering like a leaf.
Mm-hmm.
So that really made me understand that it's all about the mind. Because at that point, I gave up. Say, okay, I've done it. Like, I made it. I'm done. And then is where the mind entered and I started shivering and feeling weird. Because you feel cold and then... You know, it's, and then we went, obviously we had a little rest. We went inside a little place to have some warm drinks. We dressed up, but I was shivering for maybe an hour because all the blood started circulating, the cold and the hot mix, you know, there is a physiological explanation of what happens. But the interesting part is that up to the point it didn't happen, it only happened when I allowed my mind to kind of, okay, I'm done and let go. So that was the learning experience. It's a life learning experience that it goes beyond the experience of being in the cold. You know, it's something that really you can apply everything in the life. So that's why I think this type of experience is not just about the cold or the resilience. It's really something that you can take into your life in any situation. It's really life transformative in the true sense of the word.
Oh yeah, it sounds very, very powerful, and I've had this sort of dream of mine for a long time to go there myself as well. So let's see, whenever the COVID situation eases up a bit, maybe I can then do it. One question which I have for you about this, Francesco, is the what in your view is the connection between the breathing and the cold exposure? Because I've tried this myself. I've done Wim Hof breathing for a few years now. Occasionally, I'm not doing it every day, but like maybe a few times a week. And I've sort of found when I've been somewhere where there's a cold plunge pool or something, so I can go into the cold pool and do the breathing in the cold pool, and that actually the breathing then helps out to reduce the cold feeling, and you sort of get into this nice mental state, even though you are there in a 4-degree water. But what in your mind is the connection between the Wim Hof breathing and the cold exposure?
Yeah, I think that's a really crucial point. There is a big debate, and different people in different podcasts and blogs I've read, they have different ideas. And for me, what is my personal experience and understanding is that it goes together, is one package, as Wim says. And now I see the point. Initially, I just didn't take it because I did the whole experience and then I came back home and I started doing a lot of cold exposure, which I still do. So for example, when I was in Singapore, I bought a chest freezer to put the water so that every day I would wake up in the morning and go into the icy cold water. Because
that is awesome. That is awesome.
Just to give you an idea of how really inspired I got after this training, you know, I really wanted to, and it happened that I moved to Singapore straight after the experience with Wim Hof. And in Singapore, even if you put full cold water, it's never, like, it's nowhere near cold, it's just literally warm.
It's only lukewarm, yeah, absolutely.
I had to come up with a solution, and that was great. So every day I could do that. And I was doing it without any breathing. Because for me, I said, okay, look, you know, the breathing, I don't know, I feel like what I'm interested, I just like the feeling of the cold. So I just wake up in the morning without preparation. The first thing, believe me, like I would just go into the cold for a few minutes and then come out and do the same at the evening after work when I come back home. And it was working perfect. I mean, like, I love the cold feeling, the cold exposure. And there are lots of health benefits just doing the cold exposure. But then a few months ago, I received an email to be part of this kind of trial new online course that Wim Hof is preparing. And I accepted. I said, yeah, that's a great opportunity. And of course, it included the breathing. So I started doing the breathing again just maybe 6 months ago, and I've been doing it every day since. And just something clicked, because it's a full package. And the relationship between the two, to answer your question, is that it seems that by doing the breathing, you stimulate adrenaline, which prepares you to face the cold better.
Yeah.
So I think what happens is that once you get used to the cold and you can mentally prepare, you can, like as Wim says, I've seen, he can go straight into the cold and the body is already prepared. It knows what to expect and it's already producing that adrenaline and those chemical changes that will help him to withstand the extreme condition. But the breathing has a place and it has some benefits in itself. Now there are a lot of, there is a very interesting book just came up called The Breath, and they discuss all the different breathing techniques and the benefits of, you know, of course, all the ancient tradition of pranayama. Mm. And, you know, the breathing is not being created by Wim Hof, but what he did, he made it popular. He calls it breath work.
Yeah.
That is more neutral, it's more kind of scientific. It's nothing to do with the tradition of yoga meditation, but obviously that's exactly what it is, right?
Yeah, indeed.
And I mean, these are really powerful techniques. So I think that for me, you can just do the breathing and have amazing health benefit. Even if you don't do the cold, you can just do the cold and it has amazing benefits. You can just do the mindset, which is the other part of the Wim Hof method. And of course, mindset is everything in life. But the combination of all the three is the full package. And that's why the Wim Hof method, I think, is so effective and so beneficial. So when it comes to the cold and the breathing, it helps to withstand the cold, especially the beginning. So I would suggest for people who are interested to do it properly, because whenever there is someone like Wim Hof, let's call him, like, you know, someone that is a teacher or a master in something that have experience, and whenever these guys design a method, then everyone else follow and then they start changing bits and bobs. And I don't think that's very beneficial, in the sense that the guy has come up with a system because he is really a master of it.
Oh, yeah. And yeah.
There is a reason for it. So I would suggest people to just, if they're interested in it, to do it properly end to end, including the breathing, including the mindset, including the cold.
Now, and that's a good point. But in terms of the frequency of doing the breathing, because some people say that should do it on a daily basis. Some people should say that, you know, do it whenever you feel like, you know, having a breathing session or a cold therapy session. What would be your sort of recommendation?
Yeah, so that's another thing that I hear a lot, and I don't know what basis people say you should do it once a week, twice a week. You know, what is the evidence or the reason why, you know? Like, I think for me, I've been doing it every day for a long time. And then sometimes, because it stimulates adrenaline, but it's interesting because it doesn't make me feel, because normally adrenaline is not something you want in your system all the time. Otherwise you become, you know, a bit anxious or edgy.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But for some reason with the Wim Hof method, for me, it makes me feel more relaxed, makes me feel like I can cope better with stress, because what I'm doing is like this concept of hormesis, hormetic stress, which is the same as cold. So you do
through the breathing.
And the most crucial part of the breathing is the breath hold. Mm. So when you don't breathe for a certain period of time, you're creating stress to the body. So you're adapting, it's like an adaptation to a stressful situation. And then you do the cold, again, it's an adaptation to a stressful situation. So you become more resilient to stress. And I can speak out of my own experience. I used to have a lot of stress and anxiety. And since I'm doing these techniques, I feel that I can cope much better with stress. So I think it can be done every day. But then obviously, if some people feel that they become more, I don't know, aggressive or edgy, or they feel like it's too much adrenaline in the system for any reason, then of course they should calm down. But I don't see any supporting evidence for saying you should just do it once or twice a week. I hear a lot of biohackers saying, just do it. For me, it's great. It's so effective. And it's safe to do every day without overdoing it. You know, you just do a session in the morning. And that's it.
Perfect.
You
know? That's awesome. That is such a great story and great explanation as well. Makes me want to do Wim Hof breathing rounds right now, but maybe later today. Let's focus a little bit on the third sort of aspect of the whole Wim Hof method. We spoke about the breathing, the cold exposure, and then the third pillar, if you may, is the mindset, if you may, which one large portion of that obviously being meditation. Now you have a long experience on meditation. What sort of, you mentioned earlier that you had some personal reasons why you got into meditation, but what is your current sort of routine on meditation, and I am hearing that you went on a silent meditation retreat. Was it 10 days or something? Would be very interesting to hear your experiences about that.
Yeah, so when it comes to meditation, perhaps here is where I kind of go my own way, if you like, from what is the mainstream, even in the biohacker movement, which I appreciate sure. that they are embracing meditation because of all the scientific evidence that has come up. But again, for me, meditation is something to do with my spiritual development, even though they also talk about spiritual development and, you know, that you can argue about what that is. But so to answer your question, essentially, what is nowadays presented as meditation can be something to do with the mindset, with you know, repeating affirmation, visualizing what you want to achieve in life, or, you know, repeating a mantra, or focusing your attention onto something, a sound, or, you know, your breath, which is called focusing your attention. And to me, the way I understand meditation and the way my teacher and master explains it to me, that's not meditation. That's more of a mind exercise. Is that, again, something to do with the mind? It is very valuable. You can go a long way, but it's not meditation in the sense of going beyond the mind. So that's really what Osho, for example, I am a sannyasin of Osho. I've been initiated into the tradition of Osho. He's a contemporary mystic, left the body in 1990. There are lots of discourses available of Osho. And he's the same. If you really read the Buddhist tradition, what Buddha said is the same. So even though mindfulness is presented as a sort of focusing your attention onto something, but really Buddha was teaching to go beyond the mind. So essentially with meditation, you reach a state where there are no thoughts in the mind. And it's something that you can achieve doing any practice in few minutes per day. And it's very hard to sell.
Of course.
But that's what it is. So, and that's what I kind of practice and I aim to do. And also Osho introduced active meditation, which includes breath work, it includes body work, it includes the emotional level as well. This is something that is completely still untouched in the world of traditional meditation teachers that you find nowadays. So there are some blocks to the experience of having no thoughts in the mind, especially for modern people like us. We are so overstimulated chronically all day long that, you know, when you sit down and you close your eyes, all you see in your mind is more and more thoughts and can be very frustrating. And that's why many people, they kind of don't like meditation. Mm-hmm. Even though then they keep doing it because they hear that there are lots of benefits. And these benefits are real. There is evidence. There is now science backing it up. But it's all presented as a biohacking tool to relax your mind, to sleep better, to be more focused at work, more productive, especially in the corporate world. It makes me a little bit chuckle that meditation is used, you know, as a tool to be more productive. It's true. It works. It's like this. And there are health benefits. And I'm totally in favor of that. Yeah. But again, for me, that's just the most superficial level. The deeper level is that through meditation, you really want to know who you really are, and who you really are is something that goes beyond any content of the mind. It's a dimension beyond the mind, and it's something so ephemeral, so difficult to catch and talk about. That's why meditation teachers are called mystics, and they're not scientists, even though there is a science of mysticism, but it follows a slightly different category and parameters. And I feel like maybe one day science will catch up. I mean, everything that science is doing is just confirming what these guys thousands of years ago have realized without any tool available at the time. So all this technology, these great discoveries of the modern technology are simply saying, oh, yeah, actually, breath work works and it does this and it does that and it's so great. And how come these guys have realized it thousands of years ago without any measurement? So, you know, I'm very pleased that it is happening because that more people are getting into experiencing the health benefits of what yoga meditation can do. but it's just scratching the surface in my view.
Sure. I do understand what you're saying in terms of going beyond the mind as well, because I've done meditation for a few years, the superficial sort of mindfulness meditation, if you may, for a few years myself. And I know that I'm only scratching the surface, especially, you know, combining that with the experiences through the Wim Hof breathing exercise, for example, where you get this sort of a bit of a meditative state of leaving your body for a bit during the breath hold and so forth. I've sort of thought that, okay, well, what is this talk about going beyond the mind, that when you meditate enough and with enough focus and for years and years, then you'll be able to potentially find that place of, you know, stillness beyond any stimulation or any focus on any breath or sounds or mantras or whatnot. Now, in terms of your meditation practice, Francesco, how does it look like nowadays?
Yeah, so I think what you said is very important, because, and I think that's why I think the Wim Hof method is so helpful for many people, because it's a very fast track way to experience glimpses of no mind. So you can have, during the breath work, during the extreme exposure to cold, you can have a moment where there are no thoughts, because you can't allow your mind to flicker. And that's what meditation is really about. And you can't just be in the cold all the time. So, but that gives you that experience that there is a dimension that is beyond our normal state where we are chronically having thoughts in our mind. So, and before the Wim Hof, I tasted that dimension beyond the mind through the Osho active meditation. So this is the techniques I practice. The most famous, if you like, is called dynamic meditation, which includes 10 minutes of chaotic breathing. It's similar, but not exactly the same as Wim Hof, but it's forceful breathing, which stimulates, of course, you know, the release of CO2, and it gives a lot of energy. And also it breaks the patterns of the mind, because it's a very chaotic, it's a non-rhythmic type of breathing. So it helps to open up the unconscious. And then in the second stage, you go full catharsis. You express your emotions, you move your body. So everything that's been built up in the body and in the mind, you can, and emotionally, energetically, you can let it go and break up the shell that we carry on our daily life. And then in the third stage, you jump on the spot, you shout a mantra, who, very powerful, that raise your energy upward, and sure, really very, very powerful energizing technique. And then you stop. So you have an active part which prepares you, your body, mind, and energy to then go beyond the mind. So in the silent stage, you completely stop any activity. And again, there is this very beautiful contrast between the peak of activity to total stillness. And there, hopefully, ideally, if you have done well the first part of activity, you can experience these glimpses of no mind. And then it also has an element of celebration. So at the end, there is a very nice music where you can move the body and dance. So to end on a positive gratefulness kind of feeling to finish the meditation. And you normally do it in the morning, empty stomach. And it's a wonderful way to start the day. And then there are many other techniques that mainly involved music, dancing, breath work, and body movement. And then obviously there is always a part of silence at the end where you do the... So these are the meditation I practice. I mean, normally my routine in the morning, because I'm traveling, I don't have the right space for doing activities, I do breath work. And also because I've done like 20 years of this active meditation. And also I didn't do just the 10 days retreat. I lived for a whole year in Nepal in a forest doing, you know, up to 10 hours meditation per day. That was in 2007. And then, you know, countless retreats. I mean, like for me, holidays means going and doing some meditation retreats. And then with my partner, we used to organize meditation events in London. Now we are traveling. But yeah, I mean, for me, meditation is not just like a tool, or it's my lifestyle.
Okay, so it's much, much more than sort of a tool for biohacking and then doing some 1% improvements. It is, as you said, it's like a lifestyle, really.
Yeah, that's correct. Absolutely, yeah.
It's interesting. Me and our co-founder Aki, we did a 2-episode sort of series on meditation, as Aki is a very keen meditator himself as well. And we were talking about the and as per what you mentioned as well, Francesco, just now, is the constant stimulation of the mind. Because we like, there's always something going on. You're on your phone, you're on your computer, you're listening to podcasts, for example, which is not a bad thing, but it's still stimulation. Or you're listening to audiobooks, you're reading something. And there are very little times during the day in the modern day life whereby you're actually just alone with your thoughts, and better yet, to be even without your thoughts, just in that no mind state. Now, it would be sort of interesting to hear your thoughts in terms of how important it is to learn to be with your thoughts and push yourself towards being comfortable without having any external stimulation to your mind.
Well, that's everything, because you know, my experience, my understanding of all the mystics, what they say is that when we are born, our natural state is a clean sheet, and then we form our minds with whatever content we find in the environment, and then we get into a habit where we process thoughts in such a way that becomes so automatic that we believe that's our reality. But if we then, as adults, we consciously make an effort to retreat, and it can be on a daily basis, or you can have, you know, weekly weekends or monthly retreat, or you know, whenever you have an opportunity, you stop the damage, as you so you stop the stimulating the mind with new content. And there is a lot of content already there, years and years and years of talking, information and processing, images, emotion, thoughts, sounds. So that's more than enough to keep you busy. So what normally happens in silent retreats or meditation retreats is that at the beginning you have even an exponential increase of all the thoughts, just because you put attention to these thoughts. And then slowly, slowly, they start to come down. So I think normally it takes 3 days to feel a little bit of the curve slowing down. So ideally, if nowadays the problem is that people are so busy, they never have time to take time off. But you know, that's the whole point. That's exactly the point, because we are always on doing something, you know, from reading, from working. And even if you don't work, what we do some other type of activities. You know, there are some people who have TVs or some radio, some things chronically on, or whenever they have a break, they start checking the phone, just because they really, literally cannot stay 30 seconds without doing anything. So you need this constant stimulation. It's addictive, you know, and it's like this. That's how we work. So the first step for anyone interested in meditation is to stop new stimulants. And then ideally you start learning the techniques that can help you to, you know, cope with the thoughts that you already have. And they're more than enough to keep you busy for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, because you are like a meditation professional, if you may, and because you are living the lifestyle through meditation. So, as there will be a lot of listeners out there who potentially have dabbled on with meditation or have thought about starting to meditate, what would be your sort of top tips to starting meditation?
Move. Express. Don't sit and just close your eyes and try to meditate, because that can put a lot of people off, like it happened to me before I came to know about the Osho active meditations. So there are techniques that allow you to kind of go along with this stimulation of the mind that can release the tension. So it's like you're stressed, and then, okay, now lie down and relax. No, for me, it was like, that makes me even more stressed.
So, yeah, I understand. Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, okay, you're stressed, fine. Great. So just do some activity to release and move this energy, because this energy, the stress is not just something mental, it's also in your body, in your emotion, and there is an energy level that still science didn't put the hands on, but we all know by experience, sometimes you feel very energetic, sometimes you feel with no energy. We say it, we use this expression in our daily life, but if you want to measure and really define what is this energy, you just talk about hormones and chemicals and the oxygen level in your body. So it's hard to pinpoint, but essentially there are activities that we say in Osho-Active Meditation that you move your energy, you express your energy, and then this energy has different forms, can be emotions, can be blocks at a physical level, and that's why people are stressed and they're pain and achy. And the mind, of course, you know, repetitive thoughts that you can't just, you know, the boss told you off something, you know, a bad email, the bad deal in business, and you keep thinking of it all the time. So you just don't, if you try to stop that, it's a torture, you know. So just, and of course, that's not what mindfulness teaches, you know, the mindfulness, they teach you to watch and detach, but I find it extremely, extremely difficult to do at the beginning for someone who is not experienced. Many, after many years of practice, when you have much more relaxed and you cleaned up your mind and your emotion and your mental toxins, as well as your body toxin, then you can have a chance to enjoy a nice sitting quietly mindful session. So to do that, there are these Osho Active Meditations, which are very powerful, very effective. Thousands, millions of people around the world have done it, and they just work. And that's what I do.
That is awesome. We'll make sure we'll link some materials to the show notes of this podcast so people can go and take a look at the Osho Active Meditation materials and try it on themselves as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, Francesco, this has been such an in-depth and eye-opening discussion with you. I've learned so much. Meditation, Wim Hof, breathing, some great discussions on nutrition, ketogenic diet, and healthy lifestyles overall. Obviously, we had a great focus on the sort of mindfulness cold therapy and the breathing exercise, which is something which is very close to my heart as well. Now, before we end here, what are your top three tips for anyone leading a healthy and fulfilling life?
Well, of course, as you just mentioned now, recapping all that we discussed, you know, the nutrition, you know, the cold exposure, the breathing, the meditation, the, you know, physical activity. We didn't talk much about that, but of course, it's part of a healthy lifestyle, spending time in nature, all of the things that, you know, we know they are effective and powerful. And, you know, if you just do either, you know, two or three of that, your life can really improve. But if I were to summarize a little bit more, three things that can be applicable to everyone, regardless of the specific choices, I would say to have good habits, be very careful of the environment you are in, because the environment is very powerful and can affect you. So by environment, I mean the people you hang around with, the information you consume, what you read, what you put in your mind, and of course, what you put in your body. So the toxins are not just the toxin coming from the environment in terms of chemicals, but also the information that you consume, because that is going to into your unconscious and will determine how you think and what you think, because we don't have much control over our thoughts. You know, we are like sponge that we absorb things from the environment. So be careful the environment. So if you want to have a healthy lifestyle, hang around with healthy people who are already a little bit ahead of you, and also read things that are elevating, that are things that can be positive and constructive, going in the direction you want to go. And that will help you to form good habits. And then having a routine. And by having a routine, some people, you know, when they hear the word routine, they feel like it's boring, you know, I don't like, I want to change. But, you know, having like a discipline, meaning, you know, discipline is a beautiful concept. It's not something that if it's imposed on you, it becomes like, I personally don't like anything imposed to me, but if it's something that comes out of my own understanding and I know that doing something is good for me, then I follow it and I do it every day. And that's my discipline. So having a discipline, but out of your own experience and understanding, because that will stick with you rather than, you know, I'm saying this or someone else said that. But of course, you have to try, you have to experience. Otherwise, you would never have any habit and heavy discipline.
Oh, absolutely. So,
and the last one is having loving relationship. You know, it can be a partner, it can be friends, can be just nourishment from, you know, the pet, the animals. You know, you can be just a place you live or a hobby you do, like having love in your heart in some sort of form, because that's health. Feeling this heart activated when you feel like you are in love with life and you have that sparkle in the eyes, that also helps to change everything in terms of your biochemistry and your mindset and everything. So that's absolutely, I think, very important.
Those are some deep and very, very golden tips right there, Francesco. Thank you so much. And I do think that there would be so much more to discuss with you. Maybe we need to schedule another podcast down the line to talk about maybe the exercise and sleep and everything else around the healthy lifestyle as well. It's been a pleasure, Francesco. Thank you so much for joining our podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, guys. And Francesco, before we go, where can people follow you?
Yes, I've got a website called loveosho.com, www.loveosho. So love is for love, osho is osho.com. And there is, of course, a link to the blogs, to the podcast. I also run a podcast and I interview all the people who do Osho meditation. So, you know, there's a ton of information there. There are some videos on YouTube. And, you know, there is a bit of content if people are interested in that can have a look there.
Absolutely. And I will make sure all these links are included in the show notes. So please make sure you go and take a look at all this very, very useful information about meditation and so forth. Thank you so much, everyone. It has been a wonderful episode of Healthy Law Weekly. This has been episode number 24 with the amazing Francesco Gatti. I will speak to you next week. Thank you all. Peace.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit loveosho.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.